Devices Radio Network.
Drugs and Stuff is for informational, educational purposes only.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. This show is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. The show, we have our code ADVICES, ADVIES. Did I spell that right? ADVICES. I can't even remember. I'm trying to do like
yes.
Three. Okay, yeah. ADVICES. ADVICES, that's our code for True Nutrition. And let's see if I can start getting the ball rolling here. I'm all discombobulated trying to type and talk at the same time. It's not working. But here we go. Dave, you just came back from a weed farm last week. I don't even know what you were doing there. I've got all sorts of, I've got all these pictures from WhatsApp, and I got to know, man, what was going on with you at this weed farm? Where was this, first of all?
Oh, I can't tell you that.
Oh, seriously, this is. I gotcha. Okay, now this.
Well, I could tell you. It's not. To be honest, it's not a big secret.
Okay.
It's one of the research centers for GW Pharma.
Okay.
Who are, if I believe, and I no doubt somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, like they usually do. I believe they are the largest producer of marijuana-based medicinal products.
Okay. Okay.
Now this isn't CBD oil. This is medicines.
This is the real stuff.
Where THC and CBD play an active role in the medicine's action,
okay.
But it's not CBD oil.
Right.
So how it all comes about, I teach on a course for coppers on how to when you do a court case. I think we've covered this before, actually. If you have subject matter that the judge or the jury are not expected to know, then you, both sides, both prosecution and defense, can call in expert witnesses.
Yes.
So if a building had fallen down, you'd have an expert in construction or whatever it may be. So I work in the field of drugs and I work as a drug expert witness. But I also teach police officers how to be expert witnesses in court on a course.
Yeah.
And part of that course, they attend GW Pharma's lab to see weed in all its glory. And I've got to know David Potter, who's the botanical director of GW Pharma.
Okay.
Now, David was the very first employee of the company. And basically used to work for Shell Petroleum that were based on the site in their biodevelopment. So developing fertilizers and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And weed killers. Shell shut that side of the business down. He remained on site. He did a bit of retraining and remained on site as a sort of health and safety and security operative.
Okay.
And then he basically got I don't know if it was a phone call or a conversation one day to say, look, there's a guy taking over one of the greenhouses. I think he's looking for some staff. I think he'd be really interested in you. And turned out the guy wanted to grow weed.
Oh, wow.
To make medicinal products. Nobody had done it before in the UK. It was unheard of. And David got the job because he fitted the security qualifications that the guy needed to keep the police off his back.
Okay.
And that's how it all started. So he was the very first employee. Massive company now, turns over hundreds of millions of pounds a year.
Jeez. And this place is huge. You said this place is like 75 acres or what was it?
They have more than one site, but in total they have 75 acres of growing. They have the largest greenhouse in the UK.
Wow.
But that's on a different site. This site's their main breeding and development site.
Okay.
So they do breed plants.
Okay.
So they experiment with genetically modified plants. So it was interesting in that it wasn't quite what I thought. And he showed you the different strains, and I mean, some of these things are 8 foot tall.
Yeah.
As you can see from the pictures.
Yeah.
What I was really surprised about was the different smells.
Really? You could distinctively smell a different quality from the different strains, huh?
Yeah, very much so. Some of them were really actually quite pleasant to smell. And he explained how, where the oil comes from, and it's actually part of the plant's defense mechanism. And that's how it's all about.
Really?
And how they have a very strictly controlled area for growing male plants because they don't want pollination.
Okay.
On the female plants, because that stops the process of producing bigger and stronger and heavier buds.
Okay.
And like an illicit weed grower, they're after the maximum yield off a plant, you know.
Sure.
Square meterage is expensive, so they want the biggest yield they can get. And they've got plants returning in excess of 200 grams.
So that's a lot.
Well, the guideline within the British courts, if I get this right, I think it's 28 to about 68 grams is what the British courts say is the average yield of a cannabis plant in a grow.
Okay, okay.
So when they look at busting these illegal grows and they did look at calculating the yield, i.e. calculating how much they were going to make of what they had,
yeah,
they work within those parameters. Well, he's got stuff at 200 and 300 gram yields.
So oh, massive, I see.
Massive plant.
That's crazy.
But there was some mad crossbreeds and weird coloured fucking ones. And
yeah.
Unbeknown to me, but he had some quite rare ones. There was one called a duck foot.
Called a what?
Duck foot, because the leaf looks like a duck's foot.
Okay, really? Interesting.
See, cannabis is notorious for having that spread five-fingered leaf.
Yeah, yeah.
With big gaps. Well, this one, the leaves overlap.
Huh. Huh. I wonder if I can find... I'm going to look, see if I can find a picture of that online while we're talking here.
I don't know if I took a picture of that and sent it to you or not, but he was telling us a bit of the history of certain stuff, and he was telling us about the guy who he knows is actually now a friend of his, but the guy who is sort of regarded as the godfather of weed.
Oh, okay.
And he was an American guy, and he crossed an American cannabis plant with a Mexican one and might have been a Colombian one, I'm not sure.
Okay.
And the plant he created was short growing and very high yield.
Okay.
And he developed this plant for illicit grows because generally you don't have a lot of headroom because you're in a basement or you're in a loft.
Huh, yeah.
And you want maximum yield off a short growing plant because you want the maximum amount of drugs off it.
Absolutely, I could see that, yeah.
Now, when he developed this plant, it stunk.
Okay.
It absolutely reeked.
Okay.
And he said it smells like a fucking skunk.
Right, right.
And that is where the name skunk comes from.
I could see that. By the way, I think I just grabbed what was called duck foot. It looks like there's different varieties of it. I see a Hawaiian duck foot and some other stuff, but I just grabbed one of those and put the picture up for everybody who's watching right now. So this guy was involved with the development of what we know as skunk weed.
Yeah. So this guy, he then was pretty much a very wanted man in America. So he pissed off to Amsterdam.
Oh, sure. Smart move.
And somehow in Amsterdam, he got a license to grow weed legitimately over there.
Okay.
So he started growing legitimately and he developed all sorts of things. Anyway, he pissed the Amsterdam authorities off because he ended up breaking loads of rules that they have.
Huh, okay.
So they shut him down.
Yeah.
But David went over and actually rescued some of the plants because he had some very rare and unique species.
Yeah.
So David went over in a van, grabbed all these weird and wonderful weed plants.
Yeah, yeah.
And then pissed off back to the UK with him. I mean, he did it legitimately. The police were there when he went and took them. He got permission and everything.
Okay.
But he sort of sits about, well, somewhere between top 5 and top 10 in the world when it comes to weed.
No kidding.
So the guy knows his shit.
And apparently, I just put up a picture. This is duckfoot with a bud. And this thing, it's like purple. It's like it looks insane. This looks like a plant from an alien planet, basically.
And then he was telling me stuff like, when you look at the plant, if the leaves come out symmetrical on the stalk and they rotate, so say the first two leaves as you look at the plant are left to right, the second two leaves are front to back.
Yeah.
That's being grown from a seed.
Okay.
If it's offset stalks, that's been grown from a cutting.
Oh, for, like a clone, right? That's yeah. That, okay.
And that happens every time.
Interesting. Huh. I didn't know all that.
We went through the history of weed, the different processes, where it came from. We looked at kif from Pakistan and stuff like that.
What is that? What is that? Kef.
Kifs. Kif. I don't know if you're old enough, but old age weed smokers will remember the original nine bars and blocks of resin.
No, that's not. I never saw anything like that. It might have been different over here too when I was a kid.
You used to get Pakistani black, and it basically was a black looking slab.
Okay.
Okay. Soap bar is kif. So it's basically dried powder.
Oh yeah.
That's then compressed.
Okay, I gotcha. Huh.
And molded into a block. So that's kif.
Who's this guy that's putting a jacket on you? He looks like he's your more handsome your older brother.
That's Adrian Parsons. He's a drug expert from Kent.
Okay, he looks like he's about your height. And he looks like he doesn't lift weights, but if he did, man, I feel like he'd give you a run for your money.
I've known Adrian about 8-9 years now.
Okay.
We met at a conference. You know, Adrian was one of the very first people to take a risk on me.
No kidding.
From officialdom. He was one of the very first people that were officially involved in the drug world.
Okay.
Academic-based... that actually took a risk on me, and he was the first person to contract me to do steroid education.
No kidding. Huh.
We've worked together now for 8 years. He retires next year. I'll be sad to see him go, actually. I owe a lot to him when it comes to the work I currently do. He opened a lot of doors for me, and he's defended my ass when it's come under criticism as well.
Right on. Well, that's great to have friends like that. Looks like also it's nice to have a friend that apparently, I think, wears the same size jacket. Looks like you must have borrowed his jacket for the day, because you guys are both, what, squeezing into 3Xs over here, while it looks like everybody else they're regular nerds, basically. These guys, and I got a picture of them too. Now is this the staff here?
No, they're all people that were attending the course.
Oh, okay, I got you.
So David ordered me a 4XL especially for the day, and it was a bit snug.
I see that. Could you even get that thing buttoned up? Because it didn't look like it.
Not really. Okay. And then we went through all the history, how the plants grow, how they mature, the different stages of growth, 3 weeks of plant growth, and then the rest is bud maturation.
Okay.
And how you. So when you first start off, you do. I'll probably get this the wrong way around, but I think it's you do long daylight days. So you do very long daylight days with the light in. And then after 3 weeks, you change the daylight days, and that then causes the plant to stop growing and start to produce buds.
Hmm.
So it was stuff like that. And then he got a little bit onto the medicines. And basically, the main active ingredient, more than anything, is the THC.
Okay.
But both THC and CBD have a positive impact in treating stuff like Alzheimer's and epilepsy and things like that.
Okay.
The problem is that the THC also is very neurotoxic.
Hmm.
So they have to run the CBD to offset that. So the CBD acts as a protectant against the effect of the THC.
It balances it out. I've heard that before somehow.
But obviously this stuff is highly purified and dosed, you know, very specifically so that you've got the right amount of CBD to counter the positive actions of the THC.
I gotcha.
And we got talking about the CBD market, and he says, look, as it stands, they've found no negatives regard CBD use.
Okay.
He admits that, yes, it could become habit-forming and dependency based on the fact that you don't treat the underlying issue, so you get so used to not having the symptoms you can't stop taking CBD, but it's not, as far as they're aware, in any way, actually addictive.
Okay.
But he said the big, big problem and what he sees so much, and we were talking about heavy use within the bodybuilder fraternity, is he says there are a large amount of retailers just sell liquid weed.
Right.
And so you don't know the THC content, and it's not scientifically balanced to counteract the negative impact.
Yeah.
So there's a big portion of CBD users that are actually using THC that are in 3, 4, 5 years time going to have absolutely fucked themselves. Because they've been using unregulated levels of THC, which has been neurotoxic and damaged the brains, and there's just no way back from that. And there is no way back from that. That's the other problem. THC damage is permanent.
Yeah, I found, so here's my experience here in Michigan. So I have my my medical card. We at this point, as of this year, I can't remember what month it was, marijuana was, they passed a law where it's now recreationally legal in the state of Michigan, but they don't have any type of system to sell it yet. And so for that reason, if you want to purchase it, we have dispensaries, you still have to have a medical marijuana card. And I have that card, so I can use it for medical purposes, though I just use a very, very low dose of THC with more CBD when I've used it. And I've used that for pain, I've used that for sleep. But the problem is, now I've been to dispensaries here in Michigan, I've been to dispensaries out west in Portland. Portland has been doing this for a long time. They've been totally legal, recreational, otherwise for years now. They are so far advanced compared to us, Dave. They have so many more strains available. They can't move those things across state line because of federal laws. State-wise, it's legal. Federally, it's not. So they can't take what they have over there and bring it here. We have nearly no CBD products available. They are there, but you may find a couple per store where you get a good high CBD ratio with low THC. Otherwise, most of it is just going to be stuff to get you blasted, you know, like you're talking about. Yeah. Most of it, and even in the medical realms here in Michigan, most of it's just to get you stoned.
Well, he was saying that your average plant now will yield somewhere around 15% THC.
Okay, I've heard that.
And that's potentially very damaging. But he's had stuff like shatter, which is extracted using butane gas.
Yeah, yeah.
At 80 and 85% THC.
Good God.
And he said at that level, that can mean immediate and permanent psychosis if you take too much. Yeah. It's strong enough to do that. But he says the THC, he says it's a bit like having a fire, you know. It's there and it'll keep you warm, but get too close and it's going to burn you.
Sure, I could see that, yeah.
And it's that sort of thing. He said, this is the big problem is that people misunderstand the term medical marijuana, and they misunderstand how the drugs are used in a medical context.
Huh.
And they don't realize that you need this very precise balance to offset the negativity from THC. And unfortunately, the vast amount of the recreational products that are out there, the vast amount of the CBD market that's out there, which is very unregulated,
yeah,
and it's just as bad over here in the UK, is it's a Russian roulette as to what you're taking.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. And there's no way you can get a purely CBD product. There will always be a small element of THC in it. Apparently, it's absolutely impossible to fully remove the THC.
From what I understand, what if it's from a hemp plant, though? But then, because you can get a full-spectrum hemp plant that doesn't have THC in it, though, versus...
Yeah, no, I'm talking about marijuana that's okay. Has THC that you're trying to remove.
So I see.
The extraction process.
I see, yeah.
And I mean, this is the mad thing about it. He went through, like, the uses of the hemp plant as well.
Okay.
And I didn't realize that there was quite a number of hemp farms in the UK.
Huh. I didn't know that either.
Perfectly legal.
What's the legality, by the way, in the UK as far as marijuana goes? How does all that work?
It's currently in a bit of review. I believe it's currently Class B.
Okay.
Or is it Class C? I can't fucking remember. CBD has to be less than 0.01% of THC.
Okay.
And then it's fine. It's perfectly legal. If it's over that, it is illegal. Personal possession has got quite lax. And medical marijuana is now sort of available, but like yourselves, there's no outlet for it.
Okay.
There's no way of currently supplying it.
Okay.
I saw some really impressive results with, like, tremor studies, pre and post medication.
Yeah.
So they got an Alzheimer's patient with tremor, and they gave him a handwriting exercise, and then they gave him the treatment and gave him the handwriting exercise, and it was night and day, you know, the improvement.
No kidding.
But like he says, the big issue is this unregulated dosing of THC that people have no idea whether they're even taking it or not.
Yeah.
And the risk that a lot of the underground products are literally just liquid weed. And if they're liquid weed, the other thing is that pretty much all the strains, illicit strains of cannabis in the UK, have very low CBD. Because for years and years and years, drug dealers didn't want CBD. They only wanted THC.
Yeah, that's all they care about to push it up.
Because that was what their product was used for. So what they've done is they've, over the generations of plants, have bred out the CBD content.
Yeah.
The result is now that a lot of these less commercial and less regulated people that are producing CBD products are buying cloned plants that have very high THC and very low CBD.
Okay.
And then all they're doing is just literally, you know, extracting the oil from that plant.
Yeah.
And that's what they're pushing out as a CBD product because it's so poorly regulated. And that's where the risk is. But yeah, he was saying that it's very, very misunderstood. The fact that the THC out of the plant, though has a great deal of benefits, is extremely neurotoxic. And it's not really viable of a treatment without the CBD in there.
Okay, yeah.
And though it has been used for certain cancer treatments as THC, there has been successes, but there's been an equal number of failures as well, where the patients have ended up with more problems than they started with.
Hmm. Let me ask you this, Dave. I know that, you know, we've had discussions before on marijuana. You talked about how, you know, you even had like situations hit close to home with family and marijuana. What you've spoken out saying that you're not a big fan in the past of CBD because people seem to be using it in bodybuilding as just a Band-Aid. Having gone to this facility and heard what they had to say, did it change any of your thoughts at all?
I saw the implications of it done correctly.
Okay.
And I must admit, the evidence that I saw was impressive.
Interesting. Okay.
That doesn't change my thoughts about the reasoning behind a lot of people using CBD.
Sure.
And it doesn't change my thoughts about the misuse of the drug.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I have a great understanding of the positives of it, but I still have the same opinion of the misuse of it.
Fair enough. No, I just was curious.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's obvious, you know, I'd heard bits and bats about it does this, it does that, but to actually see the stats and see the actual results in people with epilepsy and in people with Alzheimer's, and there was quite a lot of personal testaments in the presentation as well. And it was absolutely, you know, it was quite incredible the effect this had had on some people, but I say it's what I think annoys me, may not be the wrong word, frustrates me, is that people seem to have not grasped this concept that you can't just go and smoke fucking weed or take cannabis oil and it's going to fix your problem.
Right. right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It is a very two-edged sword. And if you're not aware of the balance and consistency of what you're taking, you could be condemning yourself to a life of mental health problems.
Yeah, I can see that.
So sourcing the correct balance for the correct thing is vital when it comes to a CBD-based product.
Yeah.
Don't knock its ability to enhance people's lives. Don't knock its ability to treat some very serious and very debilitating illnesses and pain management. And don't for 1 minute question that it has actually reduced people's pain levels so significantly that they have managed to come off a lot of very addictive and very damaging pain medications as well.
Ah, that's true, yeah.
So, you know, I'm not denying any of that. My issue is with the average Facebook knobhead that jumps up and round about the fact that he's smoking four joints a night because it's healthy for him is just utter bullshit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can speak firsthand, man. My I had a very negative experience when I was younger, you know, with abuse, with marijuana, as well as a lot of other stuff. And believe me, man, I had negative experiences. It's very different, I think, when you're using it in a controlled fashion, you know. It's very different.
It's as lame and pathetic an excuse as that, well, test is healthy for TRT, so I'm going to take 5 fucking grams.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
shut up. So to clear my perspective up a little further, you said it may be class C, B, would you say class B or class C? Where do steroids fit in?
Steroids are class C.
Steroids are class C. So you can own steroids.
You can own steroids.
Yeah. You can use them personal use. You can't sell them.
Can't sell or supply or import.
What about, can you own marijuana or without any kind of a card? Okay.
No.
At least you got one thing right over there.
It was class C, then it went to class B.
Okay.
I knew it had changed. And I think it turned to class B in 2012.
Okay.
Now, there is, if you're caught with plants,
yeah,
and it's a small enough amount, which basically means one plant,
yeah,
then you have a defense of personal use, and the courts will potentially be a lot less of an issue with it.
Mm.
If you've got anywhere near enough to yield enough amount to sell, then it's a completely different story.
Okay.
So the courts generally and the police generally aren't overly bothered about enforcing the law against a person that has one plant growing on the windowsill.
Mm, yeah.
But when people have got 4 or 5 plants and saying, oh, it's personal use, and we, you know, when you look at what an average user could potentially smoke,
yeah,
and it's an 11-week turnaround, and a plant can yield 80 grams quite comfortably,
yeah,
well, most people will struggle to smoke more than the gram a day.
right.
Two at a push, so that one plant's going to yield between 80 and 40 days,
yeah,
and it's an 11-week growth cycle from start to finish.
Yeah, that's a.
So you start to struggle to argue, why have you got 2 plants? Why have you got 3 plants?
Okay.
But it was quite surprisingly, it was accepted that if it's your first grow, the yields will be pretty shit.
Mm, yeah.
But if it's your third or fourth grow, you're going to be getting pretty good yields out of those plants.
So there's a lot of gray area in there as far as how those things would be... How the definition would... I mean, there's no solid definition, it sounds like. It sounds like there's a lot of interpretation.
There isn't. And the other thing is, I mean, they also look at plant wattage against yield.
Okay.
So a 600-watt bulb per square meter should yield around 400 grams of cannabis.
Okay. Huh. You're making me want to grow weed, plant, by the way. I feel like I could...
If the plant numbers are there.
I feel like I could do this.
There's all sorts of calculations they use now about yield. Huh. But it was quite fascinating just to see how varied the plant is.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, you know, is it hard to grow? You know, is it a difficult plant to manage? And he went, no, you've got to be pretty fucking dumb to kill it.
Yeah.
He said, it's an incredibly hardy plant, actually. I said, and you've got to be pretty fucking dumb to kill it. It doesn't take a lot.
Now, all these pots, I'm going to scroll back to this picture and put this one up. I see this one where they have all these rope grids around each plant. Now, these are in dirt. This isn't like any type of a special hydroponic setup. These are all in soil, huh?
Yeah, they're all in just standard compost.
Okay. And what was the temperature like in these rooms where they're growing this stuff?
Medium. Nothing particularly excessive.
Okay. And they have people in there that are tending to these plants every day, I take it?
Yeah, but I mean, they don't need a great deal of tending. I mean, they have a timed watering system.
Yeah.
The lighting system is timed.
Okay.
And so they don't take a massive, and what you'll notice at the right of that picture, you see how the plants are higher.
Yes, I do. Yep.
Because they're a week older.
Oh, wow. So these things are growing very fast. This is like my backyard and the weeds in my yard in summertime that I can't keep up with.
So the if you have a look in the pictures, there is one of a table with a range of plants getting bigger and bigger as you go down the table. And they're in 2 week intervals, I think. But so the greenhouses are separated into batches per week.
Okay.
So at one end, you've got fully matured plants about to be harvested. At the other end, you've got brand new cuttings just starting to grow.
I see. And then I got another picture, got a couple pictures of you like standing there. One of them, you're just standing there very professionally next to the harvested plants that are hanging up drying. Another one, it looks like you're about to take a bite out of one of them.
That's the drying room.
Okay. Was this a strong, like the odor here, was this a very strong smell in these buildings?
No. It was probably stronger outside than it was inside.
Really? No kidding. Huh.
Yeah, because they've got a quite a sufficient extraction system. The drying room wasn't particularly strong in odor. Certain plants were rough. Some of them smell like fucking diesel. The weirdest smells.
Huh.
And some of them smell like sandalwood polish.
No kidding. Wow.
A real mad range of smells from this stuff. And he was, he was like, right, grab hold of this one, rub your fingers on it, sniff that one, move on to this one, rub your fingers on, sniff that one. And he's very passionate about what he does, is David.
That's crazy.
And the resin is incredibly sticky.
Okay. Yeah.
Incredibly sticky. And then we go into, it's called the potting shed, but basically it's a room where they show you the various ways that weed can be processed.
Huh.
So we look at an ice bucket method. We look at some other methods and how different types of weed is extracted from the plant.
Okay, so they not only grow the plant and then dry the plant, they're actually processing it beyond that and actually making final products is what you're telling me. And didn't you tell me, too, while we were talking on text, that a lot of this stuff is exported to places like the U.S.?
Yeah, they own GW are the only company to have the license to supply medical marijuana. Medicinal marijuana products, so there is a difference there.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't provide the plant, and they don't provide a dried version of the plant, or a resin version of the plant, or a CBD oil version of the plant. What they provide is a medicinal product.
Okay.
So obviously, it's packaged, branded as a medicine. That's what you get. You don't get anything that resembles weed. But they have the license for Canada, America, and now Europe. They're the only pharmaceutical company that can provide or are licensed to provide a medicine based on marijuana, basically.
Interesting.
That's the big difference. It's not weed. It's not the plant. It's the extracts that are then processed and made into a medicine.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool, man. It sounds like it was a pretty awesome experience overall.
Yeah, it's mad. Lunch was good as well.
Yeah, they had food there? Was there weed in the food? Oh.
No.
All right.
Well, listen, I looked after it. It was a good day.
It sounds like it. Listen, let's take a really quick break for our audio listeners. And when we come back, Dave and I were going to talk about the importance of heart health. And I had a couple questions for him about refeeds and mini diets while bulking. Sound like a plan, Dave?
Yeah, good with that.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a minute.
I got demons in my head.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, only at the Advices Radio Network. And thanks for not fast forwarding through the commercial. I'll make this very brief. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, True Nutrition. You can go to their website, truenutrition.com, and use our code ADVICES to get some additional savings off their products, help cover your shipping. Today I wanted to highlight a new product. This is something I have not tried yet. It's called EAA Plus. Now I'm familiar with their bulk EAA products. product that's unflavored. On the other hand, this is a peach mango punch flavor. I'll be really interested to check this out. Each serving contains 10 grams total essential amino acids and 5 grams of leucine. So this is going to be way better than using a BCAA product, which just turns on the machinery to allow you to start uptaking protein. This will actually has the building blocks so that you can repair and grow from this product alone. So I want to check this one out very soon, guys. If you check it out, let me know what you think. Once again, that's truenutrition.com and our code is ADVICES. And before we get back to the program, I want to give a huge shout out to Dave Crossland for being a part of the ADVICES Radio Network and sharing so freely the information that he has learned through his years of bodybuilding. You guys can check more of Dave out over at his website. Go to crossland.org.uk. That's crossland.org.uk. Crossland's Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise information and effective drug training to a wide range of professionals, as well as advice to individual users. With over 20 plus years of experience in harm reduction service, he specializes in performance and image enhancing drugs. So definitely reach out to Dave, especially if you want to get huge like he did. One more note, I wanted to remind you that if you are listening to this commercial, you're listening to the audio version. We also have a YouTube. So do us a favor, head over to YouTube and subscribe to the page. That way you can follow along with the video versions of all of our shows. All right, guys, let's get back to drugs and stuff. And then later in the week, we'll have Muscle Minds.
All right, guys, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and let's see, up next, we had a couple topics we're going to talk about today. First of all, I wanted to also mention, for anybody who is watching the video, we are getting back to iTunes. The website was down. It's back up now. We've got a few bugs left with it. It looks like the forum isn't there. Yeah, everything had crashed, but the IT guy had it put back together. And now we're just working through the bugs to get everything rearranged. So normally we would take questions from the forum, but we did have these topics. Last episode, we had this topic that we didn't get to because we had discussed, is there such a thing as doing only one cycle? We also had wanted to talk about heart health, but the first topic had it had gone so long we didn't get a chance to talk about this. So Dave, heart health, I know this is something you wanted to address. This is something that's really important to us in bodybuilding. Where do we want to go with this topic?
Well, I mean, obviously I get a lot of people contact me with health related issues from their usage. And the number one problem is usually either an inability to recover or infertility issues.
Okay.
But the second one behind that is heart health. And the number of users that I'm seeing having cardiac incidents, now they're not necessarily dying or having full-blown heart attacks, but they're needing stents or they're suffering with heart failure, is just growing constantly.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed this before about blood results, you know, and as a body, I suppose, we are a little bit more responsibility in the fact that we are now actively promoting to look at our bloods. But one of the problems with bloods is it doesn't really give us a very good reflection on our heart health.
Yeah.
And one of the main markers in there for heart stress is our CKs. And yet, what do we do when someone's got high CK? Oh, it's because you trained the day before. Oh, it's because you're carrying high muscle mass. Mm. And we need to keep an eye on our blood pressure, but we also need to get regular heart checks. Be it an echo or a wire, get a trace done. But I'm seeing more, in excess of 40 plus people this year I've had some contact with that have suffered heart issues that are users. Now, I can't obviously sit here and say steroids cause those heart issues because... Yeah. I know a few of them in particular had particularly unhealthy lifestyles. But the fact is, don't be stupid about this, all right? The biggest concern with our usage is our hearts.
Yeah.
The number one thing that if you any literature you look up, any medical report you look up, anything you look up when it comes to side effects, steroids, and the one thing that features most highly out of all the health impacts is cardiac impact, our hearts. And it's something I neglected. It was something I was very guilty of. I didn't do enough cardio. You know, cardio was a dirty word as far as I was concerned. And I now know that I should have had more, taken more time and more care at looking after my heart and focusing on getting cardio done, not because I wanted to lose fat, but purely because I needed to look after my heart.
Sure, sure.
I mean, everything we do from the point of view of gaining size,
yeah,
the increase in RBC and blood measures, the increases in blood pressure, just the style of intense training, none of it is particularly healthy for our heart. Water retention from drugs, all these things have a negative impact on the heart. The adulteration of cholesterol, all of these things play into this problem. Mm-hmm. And yet it seems to be the one area which we actually don't pay a lot of attention to.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. I feel like kidneys are the thing that a lot of people have focused on in the past few years. And I think the first thing everybody looks at is liver health. That's the first thing they think of. They think, well, I'm taking an oral. I need to worry about my liver. Beyond that, health implications aren't even really looked at a lot of times, I think.
And yet the ironic thing about the liver is there's probably only about four cases worldwide a year of serious liver disease caused by steroid use.
Really? Is that so? Huh.
Mainly what happens to the liver is you end up with cysts that fill with blood and then eventually solidify and go hard.
Okay.
But in 99% of cases, this isn't discovered until autopsy because it has no real impact on our health.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it's not fatal. It doesn't cause us any major issues. And our liver's an incredible organ in its regenerative power and its fact that it is so robust.
Yeah.
And like you said, you talk about liver, you talk about orals, and the first thing people talk about is liver impact.
Yeah.
And yet, it's the one area that you very rarely see bodybuilders with long-term damage to. Kidney is definitely one that's taken more notice just recently, and so it should. And there's more and more emerging evidence that we could have direct impact on the kidney with certain drugs. I know testosterone, high levels of testosterone have a negative impact on damaged kidneys.
Sure.
So kidneys is definitely probably should be a higher priority than liver should be, really. And yet the biggest one, the one that causes the most problems, the one that does actually kill people when it does go completely peak tong, is our hearts, and it's the one we seem to pay the least attention to.
So what can we do then? What can we do to make sure that our heart is kept safe?
Blood pressure.
Okay.
First one. Cholesterol management.
Okay.
Very, very important. Particularly long term. And bear in mind that the vast majority of users these days are TRT for life.
Yeah.
So it becomes even more crucial that cholesterol is managed long term.
I can ask you a question about that personally then. My HDL has been stuck at about 25 for a long time now, years. And a couple things I'd like to ask you. Now, I used Carterine, I believe it was 20 milligrams for about 8 weeks. And in the process, I brought my cholesterol up 10 points. Do you think that that's actually going to be beneficial? Because from what I understand, even like niacin, that it doesn't necessarily change outcomes just because you've raised those points artificially by using niacin or possibly by using carterine. What are your thoughts there?
I think it's more a case of the relationship between HDL and LDL.
Okay.
Rather than the individual values. So if HDL is on the lower side, but LDL's managed well,
yeah,
it's not. It's that relationship between the two. It's that percentage between the two that's the big issue.
Mm.
So low HDL with a high LDL, much greater risk. Low HDL with a low LDL, we're a lot safer straight away.
Okay.
I don't honestly know how much of an impact running these supplementations actually has long-term on health, because stuff like carnine and citrus bergamot have only really been getting used for the last sort of few years.
Yeah.
Carnine particularly over the last sort of 2 years, 12 months. So I think it's going to be another, and that's the other problem is, you know, problems like this take years to manifest. Yeah. So that's going to be an issue that we're probably not going to become fully aware of. Has carnine raising HDL levels actually had a positive impact on our cholesterol levels for several years to come?
Yeah.
If you're concerned, you need an angiogram. That's the only really way you're going to see what your arterial plaque buildup is like.
Mm.
It's not always the easiest thing to get, but it's worthwhile doing if you can get one, say, once every 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, fair enough. Where else do we want to go with this as far as heart health is concerned? You said blood pressure, that's a big one. Do you measure your blood pressure at home? Do you have a cuff?
I have a cuff. I don't use it anywhere as near as much as I should do. I generally know when it's up.
Okay.
And I think most of us that are fairly aware of what's going on know when it's up.
Yeah.
And the other one is obviously your blood values.
Yeah.
See, one of the big issues with increased blood pressure, even if it's not overly high, but yeah, it's just partially elevated, if that's sustained that position for a long period of time, your heart wall will start to thicken.
Okay.
Because your heart wall's under higher pressure than it's used to being under.
And what happens if your heart wall thickens then?
It becomes inflexible.
And?
It can't beat correctly.
Okay.
And then what happens is you end up with heart failure.
Is that something that can reverse itself at all?
They say, from what I know of this, that if your heart wall thickening has been drug induced, then like any muscle, you remove the pressure, you remove the resistance, and the heart will start to atrophy.
Okay.
So the heart wall will thin back down.
Okay.
But you have to remove that stimulus. The problem is that for the vast majority of users, they're now on steroids for life.
Yeah.
They're on self-diagnosed TRT for life.
500 milligrams a week. Nice and low.
There you go.
And
that's the problem.
Yeah.
They don't address the underlying issue because they're then doing 250, 300 mg a week.
Yeah.
With some bullshit excuse.
Yeah.
You know, we're not supposed to be supercharged. We're not supposed to feel good all the time. We're supposed to feel like shit every now and again. It's part of being human.
Yeah.
I mean, I was concerned for my own. I thought I was running my own a little bit high. I run 250 every fortnight.
Okay.
And I got it into my head that it was a little bit high.
And what's a fortnight again? I forget. We don't have those here.
Two weeks.
2 weeks? Okay, yeah.
So, bi-monthly.
Yes.
I ran my bloods. Unfortunately, the first set of bloods weren't able to be tested, which was exactly on the 2 week mark. So I held off another week and ran my bloods at 3 weeks.
Okay.
And my test came back at 7.81. So I am actually bang on at 2 weeks. Working that back, I am pretty much bang on at 2 weeks.
Nice.
But that management is important.
Hey, out of curiosity, while I got you there on that topic, I know you're not a big fan of AIs. Do you use any kind of estrogen control while you're on this kind of dose? And if not, where do your estrogens sit?
That's the next thing. My estrogen is within range, but at 7.81 or whatever it was, it was 96. Upper range over here is 149.
Okay.
So it's mid-range. But in relation to my test, it's a little bit on the high side.
Okay.
So I've literally just ordered, it's delivered tomorrow, some aromasin, and I'm only going to run 12.5 mg every other day just to tweak that down a little bit.
Okay, interesting. Just to kind of keep it, and you're not going to eradicate it. You're just going to try to lower it a little bit.
You've not only got to look at the drugs in range, you've got to look at the drugs in relation to each other.
Yeah. Okay.
And obviously, with a test level that low at that point, my estrogen should not be quite that high.
That makes sense.
And that only goes to say that it's probably been a little bit higher when my test has peaked post-injection.
Okay.
So it's probably touching over the 100 mark. Again, still in range, but upper end. So let's just knock it down a little bit.
Hmm. Somebody commented that Dave is a handsome bugger in that lab jacket.
I am. I'm a sexy beast. the wife agrees.
I thought you'd want to know that. A little self-esteem boost for the day.
Tell him the money is in the post. He should receive it by Friday.
So back to the blood pressure thing. I I'm going to guess when you were pushing for your highest weight, when you were looking to break 400 pounds during the making of Under Construction, the film too, were you checking your blood pressure then, or was that a case of not wanting to know?
No, I did actually, and it generally stayed very well.
Okay.
And I think one of the reasons for that was the fact that I trained as intensely as I did.
Mm, okay.
And my blood pressure actually was never particularly bad. My blood pressure got worse after the project when I took my foot off the gas with my training.
Oh, really?
Because I had no other form of sort of exercise apart from my training. So when I wasn't training as fast and as hard and as short rest periods, then my blood pressure started to increase because I was still big.
Yeah.
But actually, when I was on the projects and pushing hard and active, it remained reasonable. Yeah. It wasn't perfect, but I mean, I remember at 26 and a half stone, 124 over 56.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic, especially for a guy over 300 pounds, man. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that was at 365 pounds.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It stayed pretty consistent around those ranges.
Okay.
It was when I stopped training and when I started to really back off the training, that's when I started to see my blood pressure rise.
Mm. Had you had any... I was just going to ask you, you go ahead, because this is a little further, slightly different topic.
I think it was a combination of the down regulation in my training, but also the fact that my diet went very shitty.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I don't think that helped either.
That makes sense. I was going to ask, so I can't remember because I haven't watched Under Construction 2 in a little while. Had you had heart scans done at that time to see if there was any growth going on?
No.
Okay. And because I know you had a lot of tests done. You had seen a lot of things.
I'd had a lot of tests done. I'd had tracers done. I'd had an echo done, but I hadn't actually had a proper scan.
Okay.
Sorry, not an echo. I'd had a trace done and a wire trace, but I hadn't actually had an echo.
Okay. And so that has everything in that department been okay? I know that kidneys were that was the main thing for you, but heart health was all right. I know liver hasn't been too much of an issue, correct?
Liver's brand new. No problems with that at all. Heart is fucked, but we're working on fixing that.
Okay.
So I'm currently in heart failure, so my heart doesn't beat correctly.
Okay.
But these problems all occurred post, and the trigger in this was that down regulation of my training.
Okay.
So I had all the factors going on around that were putting pressure on my heart and making my heart work hard, but because I was physically so active in the gym, my heart health was balanced. When I stopped doing that, I was still a big bugger. And then I had the extra stresses of working very, very long hours.
Mm.
So I got heart stress from another angle, being very, very large, not being physically active enough, and my heart health started to deteriorate then. My heart wall was already thickened, but my heart was fitter.
Yeah.
Then my heart fitness reduced, and then that presented to the problem.
Okay, interesting.
So what the consultant has basically said is, if my problem is drug-based, then the fact that I now live my life as I do, it should regress.
Okay.
However, there's quite a history of heart attacks in my family. My granddad died when he was 72. My dad died in his 60s, all from heart attacks.
Mm. They were big guys from what you had said before, right?
My father wasn't. My grandfather was. My grandfather's on my mother's side. My father, obviously, is not on my mother's side.
Okay.
So both genetic lines have heart problems in them.
Oh, that's no good.
So they don't know how much of my condition is genetic, how much of my condition is drug induced. And most likely it's a little bit of both. But there's no doubt that if I hadn't done what I'd done and I'd downscaled at the end a lot better.
Yeah.
I sort of pretty much just went, fuck it, that's enough and give up.
Okay.
If I'd have done a more efficient job at the end of sorting myself out, then I probably wouldn't have the problems I have now. But, you know, I mean, it doesn't really restrict me. I get out of breath a little bit quicker than I should do, but and with work, I haven't been able to focus as much on training and cardio as I'd like to.
Hmm.
But we're planning to do a lot more bike work over the summer. And, you know, coming into next year, I'm hoping to sort of slow work down quite a lot and spend a bit more time looking after myself.
I like that idea. You had talked about getting a bike. I remember a year ago or so when I think you were on Muscle Minds with Scott Stevenson and I. You had just ordered a bike. I think you had to order it from America. It was a big one. It was for a big guy bike, right?
Yeah, fat bastard bike.
Yeah, fat bastard bike. I like that. It's good, man. So that's the game plan, is to start biking more, work a little more on cardio, get the walls in your heart to kind of relax a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. And just basically reduce the stresses of life a little bit. Because, I mean, as we were talking before we started, I think I got about 20 hours sleep between Monday and Friday last week.
Mm, yeah, that's no good. So you went to the weed farm. You were also up in Northern Ireland doing a presentation over there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. That was Wednesday. And then the flight got delayed because the plane had run out of date.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We were supposed to record, and you got stuck. You were stuck in the airport till forever.
Well, basically, yeah, we got on the plane to fly back from Northern Ireland, and the pilot came over to Tannoy and said, I'm sorry, we can't set off. Our air collision avoidance system is out of date.
Huh.
And I'm like, you've just flown from Stansted, London, to here.
Yeah.
At what point did it become out of date? You know, where did it run out?
Yeah, no kidding.
So we had a 3.5 hour layover while they fixed that.
Okay.
And obviously the knock on from that was a bit of a pain in the ass. So I didn't get back to very, very late that night.
I gotcha. Anything else we should mention on heart health? I had a couple questions for you before we left related to the size you had gained for under construction too.
The other factor in heart health is blood viscosity. So your RBC, your hematocrit, and thick bloods.
What about now? Can you use aspirin to help with that, or is this something where you just need to keep the numbers down?
To a small degree, yes, a blood thinner will help, but you still need to keep the numbers down.
Okay, okay. And number one route for that is going to be what? Donating blood, getting rid of blood if needed, right?
Or don't use EQ.
Yeah, my red blood numbers are high right now. And I'm having a hell of a time trying to get somebody to take the blood out of me. I'm not doing it personally, Dave. I know you say you can do that at home. You can do that at home. I can't do that at home. That's not going to work for me. But so that's obviously an issue. Before we did leave the show, though, I did have a couple questions for you. Now, when you pushed up to 415 pounds, did you do two things I wanted to ask you? Did you mini diet down at any point on there to keep your sensitivity high and to keep, like, or was this just a straight push up?
I did do some elements of dieting in two, but it wasn't based on any trying to recover sensitivity or anything like that. It was purely based on the fact that it looked like I was getting very fat.
Okay.
Obviously, retrospectively, I now know that it was my kidneys that were on the way out, and it was vast majority of it was water retention.
Okay.
I hadn't done at any point. Not in a way to continue progress, but that was mainly because I was still progressing. So I was still getting bigger. So they didn't see any reason to, you know, if it wasn't broke, why try and fix it?
Okay. Okay.
A lot of it depends on how well you manage your diet when you're bulking. as to whether you need to reset. And unfortunately for a lot of people, bulking is off-season. Off-season is more relaxed diet and therefore more cheats.
Sure.
And that approach will potentially give you cause to have to reset at some point.
Mm-hmm.
If you approach off-season like you did pre-comp in the strictness of your diet, then chances are you'd have much less cause to have to reset at any point, and your linear progress could possibly be a lot more. Mm. Though I do think there are periods of times where maybe not the fact that you have to mini-cut, but sometimes where you just have to hold.
Yeah.
I would probably go more the route of adding in cardio than I would go more the route of reducing food.
Okay, yeah.
You know, if I was working with somebody that I needed to reset them to some degree, I would probably look more at adding cardio rather than I would look at reducing food.
That kind of almost ties in with my other question. Did you do any kind of refeeds or cheat meals while you were on that program?
I did have cheats, but to be fair, for the vast majority, and this is probably the one bit that a lot of people never really got, was a cheat was just not eating.
Really? Oh, because you were eating, what was it, 2 cups of rice and 8 ounces of 8 ounces of meat, chicken, every hour on the hour, basically.
Every hour to an hour and a half. 8 kilo of food a day.
It's nuts, man.
So what's that? Nearly 20 pound of food a day.
Yeah, that's a lot, man.
So cheats weren't so much in the desire to eat rubbish. They were more in the desire to just not eat.
Yeah.
And being able to just switch off and not have to force another meal down when you're still really just recovering from the last one you had.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, no, I was relatively strict with the diet, and there were obviously occasions when I did break, but most of the time I didn't want to cheat because I didn't want to eat. I was just so full all the time.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that then for sure. A lot of us don't think about that. We're in our diet phase and we're thinking how we want to just add more food and can't wait till we get to that point, until you're at that point, you know?
It's a very strange phenomenon to be literally force feeding pretty much all day, every day.
Yeah.
And it sort of doesn't become, it's not a meal. You're not eating a meal. It's something you've got to do and you just do it.
Yeah.
And it becomes as mundane and as ritual as taking your shot does or as anything else you do day in, day out without thinking. It's just eat.
Yeah. You got to build that in, like you're saying, build it into a habit is I think what you're telling us.
Yeah, you just switch off to it. Hmm. You don't taste it. You don't enjoy it. You don't feel it. You just shovel it in.
Whew. That's a gift. I will tell you, not everybody can do that, I think.
It's hard. Hmm. It is hard. For a lot of people, it's one of the factors that really stops them from getting huge.
Yeah. I would say I'd be in that camp, honestly. That's the hardest part for me. I can, you know, and we've talked about that. I can easily go the other direction and diet down. Not a problem.
I have two clients that, one's prepping for a comp at the moment, so he's not with me, but he'll be coming back after the comp, and he's an ex-competitive eater, and that boy can eat.
Oh, yeah?
And as a result, that boy grows.
No kidding.
Last off season, we put 22 kilos on him.
Ex-competitive eater. Has he told you about the foods that he has eaten?
No, not really.
But, that's those guys are nuts, man.
And I have another client who can just switch off and eat, and he's starting to get into that realm of big, big boy. He's probably sitting at about 330, 340 now.
No kidding.
And he's going to start pushing up to the 350, 360 mark this year.
Damn, that's a monster right there.
He's going to be a big lad. He's not got the prettiest of physiques, but he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's not interested in that. He doesn't want to compete. He just wants to be a pure mass monster. And he can eat. He can switch off and just shovel it in.
I think he came to the right guy to help him for that kind of program too. Put on as much muscle as possible, as much size.
That's. I mean, it is extreme at that end, and it's not pleasant. There's nothing pretty about it.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, listen, we didn't get any new questions while we were here. Hopefully the forum is going to be back up by the next episode. Otherwise, we'll just have to, we'll take thread questions. We'll create a thread on Facebook or on Instagram. We can definitely easily collect questions that way ahead of time. Dave, this has been awesome, though. It's been a really cool education and a cool visual story of the weed farm out there. That place was awesome, man. That place is crazy looking.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a unique spot.
Yeah, and thank you for your time here on Drugs and Stuff. As always, it's been really great to gather your education and hear your thoughts on everything.
Thank you very much.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally, and we will see you next time.
Radio.